Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, I expressed to them I was mad. I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? That's right. It is about that time. You are now locked into WKAR's current sports right here live on the campus of Michigan State inside of Studio S on WKAR AM 870, 105.1 FM. Happy Friday, or as I like to say, Fry-yay. Really can't believe the end of the week is already here. It's been a long one. It feels like a long one for me, at least. I really hope you guys have had a great one. This will be the first weekend of the spring season. How cool is that? Looks like it's going to be a great forecast as well. Temps in the 40s. Sun is out. The sky will be blue. I'm looking forward to it. Ian Hawley, current sports engineer. How you doing, my man? Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you as well. I got a couple parking tickets in a row yesterday, so I'm glad it's Friday now and not Thursday anymore.
That's not a good way to end the week, is it?
Oh, my God. No, we'll try and go out a little better here today.
Man, you know how the parking police is here at Michigan
State. Oh, yeah.
State.
I keep playing with fire, and I keep getting burned. But, you know, it's a dangerous game, and I love the game, so I keep playing.
Do you? So you love paying.
I'm just seeing how long I can avoid them before my next ticket. That's really what I'm going for. It's the adrenaline.
Oh, man. I tell you, you are one of a kind, Ian Hawley. One of a kind. All right. We've got an entertaining hour of current sports as we customarily do here each and every weekday from 1 to 2 p.m. On today's current sports, of course, you know we will be talking the NCAA tourney. First day of the Sweet 16 was yesterday afternoon. Well, I should say last night. Yesterday evening, to be honest. And the Michigan Wolverines, wow, they just keep on trucking, right? They made it look easy peasy against Texas A&M last night. Everybody and their mama just hitting shots. It was amazing performance. You have to be real with yourself when looking at the Wolverines. I know we are here at Michigan State University, and I know talking about the tournament is a sour spot, because Michigan State got eliminated in the second round last weekend, but game recognizes game. And right now, the Michigan Wolverines have a pretty good path to the Final Four. They will play Florida State now in the Elite Eight to possibly make that Final Four dream come true. And they have a good chance at possibly playing in the national championship now. So we'll talk about the Wolverines. We will also talk about Sister Jean. You guys know I have a big crush on the 98-year-old nun that has really led this team spiritually to now an Elite Eight appearance, as Loyola Chicago now has booked the ticket to the Elite Eight and possibly a Final Four. We will talk with a man who was in the building and witnessed and has witnessed throughout this tournament the success of Loyola Chicago. It's our dear friend Carlton Valentine, former Lansing Sexton boys basketball coach. He is also the father of former Michigan State hoop great Denzel Valentine, as well as former OU men's basketball star turned coach. And he was actually a coach for an assistant coach for the Michigan State men's basketball team for a brief period before moving on and moving up the chain, up the ladder of coaching. But Drew Valentine as well. Drew Valentine is now an assistant coach for Loyola Chicago. So Carlton is pops. He's been attending the games and witnessing this magical ride for Loyola. And it's really captivated the nation in many ways. But we'll talk with Carlton Valentine about what his son Drew and Loyola Chicago is doing. We will also briefly talk about, you know, and have a brief postscript on Eastern Michigan University and the situation there. You know, we've been diving into that conversation as EMU has decided to cut four sports in order to try and climb itself out of this tremendous budget deficit. How much will that do? How much will this aid in that process in cutting these four sports? No one really knows, but I guess it's a step in the right direction. But to be honest with you all, many people are still looking at the college football program at EMU and saying why. So we'll discuss that, and we'll have a brief postscript as we went in depth in that topic with Ronald Fisher, who is a Michigan State University economics professor here on the campus of MSU. And Ronald kind of broke it down numbers-wise. So we'll briefly talk about that. And on the back end of the show, we will have Scott Pohl's chat with former sports writer for the Detroit Free Press, as well as the Atlantic State Journal, Mr. Keith Gave, who, of course, covered and has an interesting firsthand account of the Russian Five. Yeah, we played part one for you yesterday. That was just a teaser. Part two will be brought to you today, and we hope to have actually Scott Pohl live here in studio to have a brief postscript on that story as well. But yeah, Keith Gave, he has a book called The Russian Five. It's the story of how the Detroit Red Wings managed to get top Soviet hockey players to defect and play in Detroit, a move that was key to the team's first Stanley Cup championship back in 1997, their first title in 42 years. Such a compelling interview. You don't want to miss that. And we'll do all of that while, of course, inviting you to be a part of the party. Call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call. You can also join us via social media. Go to facebook.com/WKAR News. Live stream is up and running there. Comment below the live stream. I'll do my best to get to your comments throughout these next 60 minutes. And you can also even tweet us. Tweet me directly at @AlMartinWKAR or tweet the show at @WKAR_sports. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, and we start with the Michigan Wolverines men's basketball team. After a sluggish week in Kansas to start the NCAA tourney, Michigan had everything cranked up to full volume last night in Los Angeles as the number 3 seed Wolverines walloped number 7 Texas A&M 99-72 in the West Region semifinal at the Staples Center. Michigan will now play Florida State for a shot at the Final Four on Saturday. That will be an 8:49 p.m. tip-off. You can catch that game on TBS. And Michigan will do so after scoring the most points scored by a U of M team in an NCAA tournament game since 1992. The Wolverines shot 61.9% from the floor, their second-best tournament number ever. They made 14 three-pointers, also the second-best number ever. On top of that, Michigan tied a school record with its 31st victory of the year. It was as dominant really gets as U of M found its way back to the Elite Eight for the third time in Beilein's tenure. Actually, the third time in the last 6 years. Impressive stuff. We'll have more on the Elite Eight run of the Michigan Wolverines in just a second. But how about Ferris State, right? The University of Michigan isn't the only team chasing a men's college basketball national championship. On Saturday, tomorrow, Ferris State University, the top seed in the Division II men's basketball tournament, takes on Northern State out in South Dakota for the D2 national championship at 3 p.m. at Sanford, Pentagon, and Sioux Falls. Now, Northern State beat Queens North Carolina. 105-99 in double overtime on Thursday. The Bulldogs have won 25 games in a row and have a school record 37 victories after beating West Texas A&M 85-79 on Thursday in their semifinal game. A win tomorrow would give the Bulldogs their first national championship in basketball. Ferris State's only loss this season was December 16th against Lake Superior State. That was a 79-74 final. The Bulldogs also lost to Michigan State 80-72 in an exhibition back in October at the Breslin Center. But Ferris State playing in the national championship game of D2 Men's College Hoops tomorrow at 3 p.m. Exciting stuff. Congrats to Ferris State for even getting that far. That's a remarkable accomplishment. What a season. All right, sophomore Shay Colley for the Michigan State women's basketball team turned in the best scoring night of her college career. However, it was not enough to help the Michigan State women's basketball team keep its season going. The Spartans' journey came to an end with Thursday's 85-83 overtime setback to South Dakota in a WNIT third-round contest at the Sanford Coyote Sports Center. Colley finished with a career-high 31 points, added 9 boards, 7 assists to lead MSU, which ends the season with a 19-14 mark. Sophomore guard from East Lansing, Taryn McCutcheon, added 16 points. Junior Jenna Allen scored 14 for the Spartans. MSU had a chance to tie on the final possession of overtime but missed. But I will say, I watched that game as well. I watched about 4 games last night, 4, maybe 5, you know, and my remote got a lot of work last night. Let's just put it that way. However, the way that game ended in regulation, I really thought that Michigan State should have had at least 1 second left on the clock, at least a chance to get up one more shot. The referees, they went to the scorer's table. They looked at a bunch of different angles. They even brought out a stopwatch, and they could not come to a hard conclusion how much time was left on the clock when Michigan State did regain possession after Shay Colley's miss. That led to a decision to push the game into overtime, one that Susie Merchant clearly was not happy with. So I was a bit salty when it comes to how that game ended in regulation, but nonetheless, Michigan State could not get the job done in overtime. But congrats on a pretty solid run in the WNIT for the Michigan State women's basketball team. The loss ends the careers of 5 seniors for Michigan State, those being Lexi Gussert, Brandy Agee, Taya Reimer, Kennedy Johnson, and Kiara Carter. Michigan State football holding its pro day today for NFL scouts to check them out. Offensive lineman Brian Allen, linebacker Chris Fry, running back Gerald Holmes, defensive end Demetrius Cooper, and kicker Brett Scanlon will be working out as one of them look to extend MSU's streak to 51 straight years with a player selected in the NFL draft. All indications point to Brian Allen being MSU's best shot at extending that streak, as he was the lone Spartan invited to the NFL Combine a few weeks back in Indianapolis, Indiana. Now, back in January, that's when that took place. NFL draft expert Mel Kiper said Allen could potentially be a late-round pick. MSU held its first scrimmage on Thursday afternoon also at Spartan Stadium, with the defense winning 12-3. And, of course, what is a modified scoring system. But Pro Day taking place here at MSU's campus. We'll keep you posted on Monday when it comes to the results of Pro Day. It's rivalry week for the Michigan State Spartans. You know, I've always had trouble saying it, Ian. Rivalry. Say rivalry 3 times fast, real quick. Can you do it?
I don't want to embarrass myself on
just
the air.
Just try it.
Rivalry.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? It's a tough twister. Yeah. Rivalry week for MSU, at least for the Diamond, I should say, Ian. Now, I know what you're thinking. Basketball and football are both over. Not in season right now. So how in the world is it already time to play Michigan again? Well, Spartan Nation, your baseball team is headed to Ann Arbor this weekend for a home-away series with the Wolverines. So far, the Michigan State baseball team is 6-13 on the year and 2-5 when playing away from home, which, as I mentioned, is where they will be to begin the series. This will also be the Spartans' first Big Ten game/series of the season. The games against Illinois during the first pitch invitational did not count towards the conference record. The first game and series will start today at 4 p.m. Michigan State softball opens Big Ten play at conference rival Nebraska this weekend. The 3-game series kicks off today at 6:30 p.m. followed by 2 p.m. and 1 p.m. games on Saturday and Sunday, respectively. All right, the MHSAA Boys Basketball Tournament is underway, and games taking place down the street at the Breslin Center as we speak. And when it comes to action that we've already seen in Class C, Glen Lake edged Monroe St. Mary Catholic Central 62-56. The Lakers advanced to their first state title final since 1996, and fourth in school history. They'll face Detroit Edison in the championship at 4:30 p.m. tomorrow. Detroit Edison withstood a furious Grand Rapids Covenant Christian rally Thursday to move to its first state championship game with a 55-43 win. In Class D, the Southfield Christian Eagles held Dollar Bay. I love that name, by the way. Dollar Bay. That's a real name. Scoreless for the first 6 minutes and 22 seconds of play, and led by as many as 41 points en route to beating the Blue Bolts 71-32 in the Class D semi on Thursday. Southfield Christian will face Buckley in the state championship game 10 a.m. tomorrow at the Breslin Center. Buckley defeated Hillsdale Academy 65-55 in the other Class D semifinal on Thursday. And when it comes to the games that are underway, I know Foster Lawyer right now, Ian, is playing currently at the Breslin Center. Can you give us a score update? Maybe after the introduction, I want to know what the score is of that game. I know Foster Lawyer has been going off, at least in the second half, at least. I think he has something like, 20-plus points, 24 points, 34 points. He has 34 points right now. Wow. 34 points for Foster Lawyer right now. Dude is going off. That's going to be a nice guard tandem with him and Cassius Winston next season. But we'll get a score update in just a moment. Oh, do you have one, Ian? Go ahead.
I see a Twitter update. The most recent one, it was as about 5 minutes ago. Clarkston leads De La Salle 62-44 after three quarters. Foster Lawyer has 34.
Wow.
And Curry with 16 to lead Clarkston.
How about that? Foster Lawyer, if you have not seen this young man ball, Spartan fans, you are in for a treat next season. He is fun to watch. Fun to watch. He kind of reminds me of like a Steve Nash. He really does. All right, James Harden scored. Yeah, now to much worse news when it comes to Detroit pro sports. James Harden scored 8 of his 21 points in overtime. And the Western Conference leading Houston Rockets continued their march to home court advantage in the playoffs with a 100-96 victory over the Detroit Pistons. The Pistons sit at 32-40 now, and they were able to force overtime with a late rally led by rookie Luke Kennard. But the NBA's likely MVP was just too much in overtime. The Pistons had a good defensive night, limiting the Rockets to 35.4% shooting. But a loss is a loss, right? And the Pistons' next contest will now come tomorrow night as they will host the Chicago Bulls at 7 p.m. Playoffs just slowly slipping away here. And the inevitable became official last night as the Detroit Red Wings were mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. Their 1-0 loss to the Washington Capitals at Little Caesars Arena cemented what had been building for the past 2 months, that the Wings were going to miss the playoffs for a second straight year. The Wings will now travel to Toronto tomorrow to take on the Toronto Maple Leafs at 7 p.m. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Let's keep it pushing.
Feel so much that so emotional for me that I am so grateful to the young men and to Porter, of course, for doing this. I'm trying to keep myself calm, but I know that I'm not. And one of the things Custer said to me as he came off the court with, "Sister Jean, we broke your bracket." I said, "I don't care how far you break my bracket. As long as you've broken it, you have to go a little more now." And it's just, I'm happy for us, for my community, for Loyola, for the city of Chicago, and for the world, because we have people watching us all over the world. And the viewing numbers on every channel should go up over this weekend, and I'm sure that it will. So thank you.
Do you have ever imagined a ride like this when this whole thing started?
No, this is really my first NCAA appearance and at a real game. I've watched on television for years before all you guys were born, and I've watched, but never have I attended one before, and I've loved every second. It's been such a great trip for me.
Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. Happy Friday, or as I like to say, Fri-yay. It is March 23rd, 2018, and you can do all things when you got the big man upstairs on your side, right? Sister Jean. Sister Jean Dolores Schmidt. She has really become the face of the NCAA tourney. She's such a compelling personality because it's not often that you hear that a team has a 98-year-old chaplain who is a nun who says a prayer before the game to lead this team spiritually. And now we have a team in Loyola, Chicago. Nobody had, and if you say you did, you're lying, all right? Nobody had Loyola, Chicago going to the Elite Eight with a chance of rolling to the Final Four. They will play Kansas State tomorrow to try and make that dream come true. But it's been so fun to watch Loyola Chicago. We'll get to the University of Michigan men's basketball team in just a moment, but I want to focus on Loyola Chicago because they are my favorite story of the tournament. And there is a local tie when discussing Loyola Chicago because, as many of you know, one of the assistant coaches for that very team is Drew Valentine, who has local ties here to Lansing. He is the son of Carlton Valentine, former Lansing Sexton boys basketball coach. His brother is Denzel Valentine, who is a famed guard at Michigan State University and is now balling out for the Chicago Bulls. Carlton, by the way, also played here at Michigan State University. So that's your local tie, and it's so fun, you know, watching Drew and the fellow coaches of Loyola Chicago along with the players celebrate this moment. Loyola Chicago making history right now. And right now we have on the phone the father of Drew Valentine, who is a dear friend of Current Sports. He has been at these games following his son's remarkable coaching job and following this remarkable team. We right now have live on line one, my dear friend Carlton Valentine. Carlton, what's up, my man?
Al, how you doing, my man? How you doing, brother? You been good?
I've been blessed, man, but I tell you what, I can't be doing as good as you are right now because what a run for Loyola Chicago, right?
I'm telling you, man, like you said, I kind of heard you say nobody had them in their bracket, but I did.
Well, I'm sure you did, right?
So, you know, I always do two, and I had my Michigan State bracket, and I got my Loyola bracket. So, you know, I got to roll with Loyola right now. They're doing a great job. I was in Dallas last week for the first and second rounds, 85 degrees. Today I'm in Atlanta, man. I'm out here in Buckhead, you know, enjoying the weather and enjoying the wins, man. And it's good to have a team to follow in March, you know what I mean? If my Spartans aren't in it, then you know I'm gonna follow. I was gonna follow Drew anyway, but
right.
Hey, this one heck of a ride. I told him thanks for taking me with you.
I'm telling you, it just blows my mind because, and of course, Carlton, you had to have at least one of your brackets with Loyola Chicago going pretty deep because you do have that blood tie when it comes to your son, Drew, who is doing a really cool job. And I think it's just a matter of time before he really starts to make headway as a head coach when he gets that opportunity. It's going to come. It's going to come. And he is really getting a lot of great experience right now as an assistant coach for Loyola Chicago. But what has this been like? I mean, my goodness. I mean, Sister Jean has really, again, she's become, in my opinion, the face of the tournament right now. And Drew to be an assistant coach on this staff. Can you just kind of tell our listeners out there, Carlton, how did Drew become an assistant coach at Loyola in the first place? How did that journey come to a culmination with him?
Well, it's crazy, man, how everything happened. You know, Drew graduated. He played 4 years at Oakland. And then when he got done, he spent 2 years at Michigan State as a grad assistant under Coach Izzo. And then he was hired at Oakland. Oakland hired him back as a full-time assistant coach for two seasons. And, you know, a lot of coaching moves happened at Oakland, and then Greg Happy had hired Drew as the recruiting coordinator at Oakland University. And after Drew's second year, a lot of coaches, they started calling Drew for jobs. I mean, at the end of last year, he had four or five different jobs on the table that he could have took. But he really liked, you know, the coach at Loyola, Porter Moser. He liked what he stood for. He liked his values, his morals, and, you know, how he was coaching and recruiting and treating kids as student-athletes. And it kind of fit what he was looking for at the time. Mm-hmm. And so he took the job there. It didn't hurt that Denzel is playing for the Chicago Bulls. So,
right, that's true.
I mean, that's an added plus. And then, you know, we have an apartment in Chicago, my wife Kathy and I. And so, you know, we got the whole family there in Chicago. So it's kind of a crazy good fit at the time. Drew got married in August. So, yeah, they moved to Chicago and things seem to be working out good, man.
Carlton, when did you know that the coaching bug had bit your son, Drew? Because, again, he's a coach's son. You're a coach, Carlton, and you did a remarkable job here locally, as has been noted countless times as the head coach at Lansing Section High School. You've won state championships. But when did you see it in your son, when you really said, oh, man, he could really become a great coach one day?
When he's about 8 years old.
That young?
When he's about 8 years old, Drew was a quarterback, you know, at Lansing Section. He was always able to direct. I guess, you know, being a coach's son, you know, we watch a lot of film. We study film. And, you know, Drew always knew all five positions. He just didn't know what he had to do. He knew all five, and he could help everybody on the team if they were having difficulty. And, you know, he's a leader. And that's kind of a sign of someone who has a coach's mentality. You know, he's able to play the game and able to see the game and able to teach the game. And I always say, you know, as a coach, you know, you just can't be able to play. You got to be able to teach and teach in a variety of different ways, you know, because you got different kind of learners. You got audio learners, you got visual learners, and then you have the manual learners where you got to, you know, put hands on to teach. And, you know, he had all three of those aspects, man. Even as a young kid, man, you know, he would walk up to the line of scrimmage, man, and be trying to audible and tell the guys where he's going. And on the basketball
right.
court, guys were in the wrong place, and he's telling them where to go. So, you know, he started coaching really as a player, if you really want to think about it. You know, he was a two-time captain at Oakland University on his college basketball team. And mm-hmm. I think not only I saw it, but all the coaches that he played for saw it as well.
Carlton, in what way does he remind you when it comes to your coaching ability? Do you look at some of the things he does and say, hey, that looks like me on the sidelines?
Well, I'll tell you, man, that dude's a lot smarter than me. So,
Stop it.
He's a lot smarter than me. He looks better. You know, he dresses better. He's a lot slimmer. So ain't a whole lot of similarities there. I think where we do favor each other is that, you know, we both have a great passion for the game of basketball. I think, you know, his sideline demeanor is a little more calmer than mine, and I was more demonstrative and loud, and, you know, he's a little more laid back, but, you know, he has a true passion for the game and teaching and, you know, and being able to relate to players. I think that's where what we both are very similar in our coaching styles is that, you know, we can relate to players and try to help them be the best they can be.
Carlton, of course, you and your wife, Kathy, have been following the remarkable journey of your two sons in Denzel in the NBA and Drew now at Loyola Chicago as an assistant coach. When you follow Loyola Chicago throughout this year, what makes this team special? Was there something or a moment throughout this season where you said this team could really upset a lot of brackets come March?
Yeah, you know, and actually, it was really interesting because I've been a Big Ten guy my whole life, you know, playing in the Big Ten, and then, you know, going to Big Ten games, you know, the arenas, you know, the coaches, you know, the players and everything. This has been different because the Missouri Valley Conference is a lot different. The arenas are different, the coaches and everything. So it was a big learning curve for me. But the thing that I saw with Loyola was that they had total buy-in to what the coaching staff was selling. And, I mean, when you watch them play, man, if they don't have a fast break, they break down, they run their offense, they get ball reversal. It's not pass to one guy, he dribbles 10 times and they shoot. They share the ball together. They actually like each other. And they play really good on defense together. They got constant communication on the defensive end. And I really wasn't surprised. I went to the Thanksgiving tournament down in Savannah, Georgia. Mm-hmm. And I told my wife, I'm like, this team is pretty good. I mean, they were beating the teams down there by double-digit wins. It was they played UNC Charlotte, and then they played Kent State. Mm-hmm. And they beat both of those teams by double-digit wins. It was crazy.
Amazing. And, you know, a stat that really boggles my mind, when you look at this run and here in March, you know, they now advance to the Elite Eight on three consecutive last-second game-winning jumpers over number 6 Miami, number 3 Tennessee, and then yesterday over number 7 Nevada. Yesterday it was Marcus Towns who hit the dagger with 6 seconds left to help Loyola punch its Elite Eight ticket. You know, I can't help but think, you know, watching Sister Jean after every game talk about the Lord and trusting and faith. Sister Jean is such an intriguing personality, and it's such a cool story, Carlton. When is the first time you met Sister Jean?
I met Sister Jean, I think maybe midway through the season.
Mm-hmm.
She's at every game, and you can feel her presence in the gym, and all the guys know that she's there. They always go up and hug her after the games, and you know, she actually sends out text messages to the guys.
she can text at 98 years old. She's texting.
Oh yeah, she's telling them what they're doing wrong, what they're doing right, and you know, she. The one thing about her, she's 98 years old, but she's seen a lot more than a little bit.
And, right.
Gosh, you almost got to listen to her when she's telling you stuff. I mean, not that you wouldn't anyway, but she kind of knows the game of basketball, and she's a pretty amazing person. And to be 98 years old and be able to do the things that she can do is just, I think, pretty amazing.
Without a doubt, Carlton. And again, yeah, you guys, of course, out in Atlanta, playing at Phillips Arena, and you know, I just want to elaborate on this run for, you know, you as a father watching this run for both your sons and Drew and, of course, and Denzel in the NBA. What's this like as a dad, Carlton?
Man, it's pure pleasure, man. It's joy. It's excitement, man. I'm proud as a dad, but probably saying proud is not a big enough word because, you know, they've taken the game that I love and I've worked and played my whole life, and they've turned it into their own, and they do it their own way, and they got their own signature on the game. So it's kind of fun to sit back and watch them. It's fun to watch Denzel, man, you know, because, you know, I just talked to him this morning. He's the same dude, man. We talk pretty much every day, and to be at the status and level he is, man, to see how humble he is and how he takes care of his mom and brother and how he takes care of us. And then, you know, to watch how, you know, Drew's become a coach and how he's on his way, man. I'd say in the next 4 or 5 years, he's going to be a head coach somewhere. And it's just pretty amazing, man. I'm proud of them guys, man. But, you know, I'd be proud of them if they were doing anything, but to take this game to the level they have is just, it's just pretty exciting for me to sit back and watch that.
And I tell you what, a lot of that, of course, has to do with the parenting of both yourself and Kathy. Truly remarkable thing. And before I let you go, Carlton, I do want to give you the forum to talk about what we have been talking about pretty much all week, the loss that Michigan State had downtown Detroit at Little Caesars Arena against the Syracuse Orange. And you heard a lot of people criticize Izzo. A lot, you know, Izzo is taking the heat like a man and saying, hey, things happen. The tournament is unpredictable. What do you make of MSU's season this year, and how do you think this team should be remembered, Carlton?
Well, it's been a heck of a year, man. If you look at it, man, those guys won 30 games, one of the best seasons in MSU regular season history. You know, they won a Big Ten title, basically with, you know, four sophomores and a freshman starting. You know, to criticize Coach Izzo is like a finger painter criticizing Mozart. You know what I mean? That coaching staff, they know exactly what they're doing. You know, and you know, I was telling somebody the other day, you know, unless you go to practice, unless you're in the film session, unless you're in the team meetings, unless you're doing everything with the team, you really don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. You really don't know. You can – everybody in the stands is undefeated. Everybody watching the game, they undefeated. But once you get down in the trenches, it's a whole different game, man. And that coaching staff, they've been there for a while. You know, Coach Izzo been in seven Final Four. Dwayne Stevens, he know what he's doing. Fife's been a head coach, and Mike Garland is the guru. So, you know, things happen in the tournament, and, you know, at the end of the day, Al, only one team's going to win it. We wanted the team to go farther, but only one team's going to win this tournament at the end of the day. So, mm-hmm. you know, you lick your wounds, get back on the horse, and keep riding. But, you know, I can respect, you know, the Spartan fans and people that watch the games, they have their own opinion. But, you know, the way I look at it is if you don't go to practice and you're not in the film session, you're not on the bus with the team, you're not in the locker room, you're not grinding, you're not running no sprints, you're not in the weight room at 6 in the morning, then you don't really, really know what's going on. So that's just my spin on everything. I support those guys. You know, I've known Tom Izzo for 34 years. He recruited me as a young man coming out of the Mather High School in Washington, D.C.
Yep.
And, you know, he coached my son, Denzel, to be a, you know, National Player of the Year. He gave my son, Drew, an opportunity to come on his staff and, you know, get a master's degree and then become a coach. So I got nothing but love for the Spartans and Coach Izzo and the fam. Criticism will never be coming from me because when I was a coach, I got a lot of criticism, but I guess it comes along with being a coach. If you can't handle it, get out the game.
Very well said. It comes with the territory, right, Carlton? My man, Carlton Valentine, former Lansing Sexton boys basketball coach and father of Denzel and Drew Valentine. Well, hey, Carlton, we hope you guys keep on riding the Loyola Chicago train, possibly to a Final Four come tomorrow night. Good luck to you all, and always good chatting with you, my man.
No, you know, I appreciate you, Al. Thanks for having me, man.
Always, always. Carlton Valentine, the one and the only. All right, but you know what? Before I hit this first break, Ian, I do want to welcome to the show Jason Fuller as well. Every Friday we're having Jason or Justin Kane or Todd Duckett come on and talk about a really cool event, the Battlefield Brawl, the 9th annual Battlefield Brawl that will take place near the end of next month. It's a flag football tournament that raises money for a great cause. Jason Fuller is online too to talk about that right now, real briefly. Jason, what's up, my man?
Not much, brother. What's going on?
Always good chatting with you. Hope your bracket is intact, maybe.
Well, a little bit. It's not too bad. I had, you know, I had the Sparties going all the way, but right. You know, but I still got good hopes with Michigan and Villanova. So we'll see what happens.
All right. Well, before we hit this first break, real quick, Jason. Again, our, you know, every Friday we're bringing you on, or you know, some representative on, whether it be Justin or Todd, to talk about the Battlefield Brawl next month. For those that don't know about it, what is it and how can they get involved?
All right. Well, the Battlefield Brawl is exactly a flag football charity tournament that raises money for organizations around the Lansing area that provide, you know, transportation and other means and things to, you know, the community. Okay. This year, The Battlefield Brawl 9 is going to be benefiting the Davies Project, which provides transportation to low-income families for kids with medical problems, provides transportation to and from appointments. And it's also going to benefit Todd's New World Flood organization that he has, bettering the lives of children within the community. But what the Battlefield Brawl is, when it started 9 years ago, it was a brainchild of Todd and Justin. Justin being a cancer survivor, he had brain cancer at the age of 10, 11, and 12, had surgery and stuff, and didn't know much what he was going to do with his life because he was told he could never play sports, and so at least impact sports. But Justin met up with Todd through some stuff, and they started up the Battlefield Brawl. And it's been going on for 9 years. We have had a great turnout over the time. Everybody from Mateen to Drew Stanton, Todd's been at it every year. We've had Bo Gracchus has been out there.
Andre Hudson.
Paul Davis came out. Andre Hudson's out there. Charlie Bell's been out there. Last year, I can't even, I'm drawing a blank.
Darian Harris. With,
Darian is always out there. So, and it's been a great show. You've been out there for the last 5-6 years.
Crazy, right? I can't believe that.
ever since you were at that other entity down the road with that number six.
Right.
Right. But, it's going to be a great thing right now. We've got a great roster of X-Factors coming out, including yourself. Right now, we're sitting with, at the last meeting we had a week ago, we had 8 teams that are interested and pretty much registered, and we had 34 X-Factors registered so far.
Nice.
So it's waiting to see what's going to go on there and stuff. And just to answer your question that you gave Ian earlier.
Right.
Foster Lawyer went for 42 points,
wow.
11 of 17 from the field goal for field goals, 7-11 from behind the three-point arc, 11 of 11 from the line. He had 4 boards, 4 assists, and 3 personal fouls, and Clarkston won 74-49.
Look at that. Jason doubles as a reporter for us as well. Jason, thank you so much, my man. And again, as always, we'll post information about the 9th annual brawl on our Facebook page as well. You be easy, brother.
You be easy too, bro. We'll talk to you later.
Always, man.
All right, bye.
Foster Lawyer just going off today. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll bring to you part 2 of Scott Pohl's chat with Keith Gabe about his book, The Russian Five. Don't go anywhere. Yesterday, we brought to you the first part of our interview with former Detroit Free Press sports writer Keith Gabe about his book, The Russian Five. It's the story of how the Detroit Red Wings managed to get top Soviet hockey players to defect and play in Detroit, a move that was key to the team's first Stanley Cup championship back in 1997, their first title in 42 years. Gabe actually helped the Wings communicate with the players using his Russian language skills from 6 years in the U.S. Army, eavesdropping on Soviet troops during the Cold War. Today, part 2 of Scott Pohl's conversation with Keith Gabe about the Russian Five.
The Hall of Fame coach, Scotty Bowman, ultimately, when he gets all 5 of these guys on the team at the same time, he decides to play them together. The unit becomes known as the Russian Five. The on-ice communication between players makes a lot of sense, but they were also all terrific players, and ultimately, the Red Wings won their first Stanley Cup since 1955 in 1997.
Yes. I give Scotty Bowman all the credit in the world. I'm grateful to him, thankful for him that he was able to make some pretty controversial trades to acquire Slavutisov first and Igor Larionov then, and have 5 of them to put together. The one thing Scotty Bowman knew from coaching against the Russians for much of his, a lot of his career, was that they like to play in 5-man units as opposed to North America, where they play three forwards, two defensemen. You mix and match, change units, in the middle of a game and so on. The Russians swap 5 men out at a time. He got these guys together and changed the NHL, changed the way the game was played in North America. And the league has not been the same since. It's been a better hockey league ever since because everybody saw what Detroit was doing and everybody tried to mimic it. And it wasn't just the Russian Five. They didn't always play together, Scott. He often broke them up. And, you know, these guys played with other players on the team all the time. All those other players saw their skills improve. They understood, they began to understand the importance of puck possession, not just dump it in the other end and chase after it and hit somebody and try and get the puck back and set up a play. The Russians didn't do that. They kept the puck all the time. You talk to Brendan Shanahan and Steve Yzerman about playing against the Russian Five in just a typical practice, a daily practice, and they complain about it. You go on a shift for 45 seconds and never touch the puck because they have it all the time. Teams in the NHL in those years when the Russian Five played together, they hated to play against the Detroit Red Wings because they never got to touch the puck. Detroit had it all the time. And that's what changed the game in the NHL.
1997, the Red Wings win the Stanley Cup. Very short time later, they want to celebrate together. And as a precaution, they rent a limousine. The limousine is involved in a terrible accident. And the accident results in injuries that end the careers of Vladimir Konstantinov and team masseuse Sergei Manatsakhanov. You felt that personally, knowing these men individually. Tell us about the aftermath of that accident.
Yeah, I'd like to point out that that first celebration of the winning the Stanley Cup in 1997, a pretty special moment when Steve Yzerman took the Stanley Cup and skated it around the ice like the captains do traditionally after the commissioner of the league hands him the Stanley Cup, and the first thing he did when he made his lap around was look for somebody to give the cup to. Whoever the captain hands the cup off to next tells you a lot about your hockey team. And Yzerman looked for Slava Vatisov, and he skated over to Slava and he gave him the Stanley Cup. And Slava looked around and he looked for Igor Leonov. He said, "Igor, come with me." And the two older Russians, the two great Russians, skated the Stanley Cup around the ice at Joe Louis Arena together. It was an amazing moment for global hockey. And you're right. That was the beginning of an incredible summer of joy, what should have been a summer of joy. 42 years in the making, Scott. They finally win a Stanley Cup. The party lasts for 6 days. The team had gotten together at a golf course in suburban Macomb County. They spent the day with a Stanley Cup golfing, one last day together to parade the Stanley Cup around. After the golf course, they had dinner. They were going to some of their favorite watering holes and so on. And you're right, they did. They took all the necessary precautions. They hired 7 limousines so that they could, kind of divide up, several guys in each car and drive around and make sure that nobody was drinking and driving and doing anything that might have, caused some trouble, trying to be safe and do the right thing. The Russians, 3 of the Russians, Slava Vatisov, Igor Larionov, and the team massage therapist, Sergei Manatsakhanov, were in one limo. They left a little bit early. And the limo driver driving southbound on Woodward Avenue, about 16 miles north of where they had a parade just a few days earlier, fell asleep. The limo left the roadway, hit a big maple tree there in really downtown Birmingham. And there ended the summer of joy right there. Everything faded to black. And even as a player say, at that very moment, the Stanley Cup that had been the center of their universe, the thing that was most important to them, suddenly meant nothing because their comrades, their teammates were fighting for their lives at a hospital in Royal Oak.
Keith Gave is the author of The Russian Five, a story of espionage, defection, bribery, and courage. Keith, tell me about the documentary film that accompanies your book.
Yeah, the documentary film will premiere where it should, as far as I'm concerned. It was my suggestion all along. The film's going to premiere at the Detroit Free Press Film Festival on April 11th at the Fillmore Detroit Theater. I have credits as a writer producer. The film company, film group that wanted to put this thing together called me about probably 4 years ago now. Young director Joshua Reel out. He's from Port Huron, big Wings fan, and thought this might make a documentary. He called first Jim Leitz because he knew that Leitz was a big had a big hand in the early defections of these three young players. And Light says, well, if you're going to do anything, you got to talk to Keith Gave. And so Joshua found me and we started talking. And I said, I'm in. I'll help out as much as I can. You know, my role in that whole thing as a producer was credibility with the Russian players, with the Red Wings and so on. And, you know, we met with all the Russian players when they were at the Winter Classic outdoor hockey game that they played against the Toronto Maple Leafs in the beginning. I think it was the beginning of 2015. The five Russians reunited there at Comerica Park for that outdoor game. And after the game, we were able to go in and talk with not with Vladimir Konstantinov, obviously, but with the other four, all agreed to be part of this film. And that's when I started to get serious about, you know, kicking this book out as well, because I knew I'd have a chance to talk with all these guys again and a lot of other people, Scotty Bowman, Steve Eisman, Brendan Shanahan, and so on, and really kind of update and refresh all my notes and give me something to write about. And by being involved in the Russian Five documentary, like I was, it helped me get everything I needed to put together the book, The Russian Five.
Keith Gave, thank you.
My pleasure, Scott. Thank you very much.
For WKAR News, I'm Scott Pohl.
All right, that's great stuff. That's a great interview, a great bit there. And right now we actually have Scott Pohl live here in studio for a brief postscript. Again, that was Scott's conversation with former Detroit Free Press sports writer Keith Gave about his book, The Russian Five, and you actually have the book live here in studio with us. Scott, have you combed through it a bit, and what are your thoughts?
I have. Well, you know, the Free Press has run a couple of excerpts, too, and there are more to come in the build-up to the film debut in a few weeks. And it's a spy story. You know, I've told people who aren't hockey fans that they could still find a lot that they would like in this book because of the real-life cloak and dagger stuff.
Exactly. I
mean, Keith Gave was in the U.S. Army and learned Russian and spent 6 years intercepting Russian Army communications and translating them during the Cold War, when that was not the safest job in the world to have.
This sounds like a James Bond story, Scott.
And and this is all in the full interview that you can hear at WKAR.org. It's about 16 minutes altogether.
Right.
How the Red Wings asked him if he would help them communicate with the Russian players that they had just drafted, and offered him a lot of money to do so, and his journalistic ethics wouldn't allow him to take the money. But he thought about it and decided that if the Free Press would get exclusive rights to the stories of these players when they leave Russia, when they get here, the first exclusive interviews, that sort of thing, if the Red Wings would assure him that the Free Press would get the exclusive coverage rights to these stories, then he would help them, which he did. He went to a hockey tournament that Sergei Fedorov was going to play in, and so was Vladimir Konstantinov. And he handed them both some materials from the Red Wings, and tucked inside those materials was a handwritten letter explaining what the Red Wings wanted to do to get them to leave Russia. Soldiers, armed Russian soldiers standing nearby. And this was kind of dangerous.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Oh, my goodness. And I know Keith, he will appear at the Schuller Bookstore in Okemos tomorrow at 2 p.m. He'll also be at the Schuller store in Grand Rapids Saturday night at 7. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is compelling on so many different levels. And I just can't imagine, you know, here you are as a sports writer, going to, you know, going across the world to do something like this. It had to be a treat chatting with them, right, Scott?
Absolutely. And I got to tell you, if you never watched the Russian Five play together as a unit and the whole story of Scotty Bowman deciding to play them as a unit and how the other members of the team hated to even practice against the Russian Five because they never gave up the puck.
Right, exactly.
You never saw the puck if you played against the Russian Five. It was just incredible. And the heartbreaking injury suffered by Vladimir Konstantinov, ending his career just a week or so after winning that first Stanley Cup. He was one of the great defensemen in the world. He was the captain of the Red Army team. And losing him was just heartbreaking for hockey fans.
What a story. Well, I will say, I mean, back in those days with the, you know, the late 90s, right? That's when Detroit was really hockey town.
That first cup was in 97. First time they won the cup in
42 years,
and they went on to win three more over the course of the next decade or so.
Oh, the glory days. I know many Winged Wheel fans wish we could turn the clock back right now, right, as the Wings are – looks like you're going to miss the playoff for a second straight season.
Yep.
But, Scott, outstanding work. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it. Thanks.
You got it. Again, they can catch your full interview. If you want to check out the entire interview, just simply go to WKAR.org. All right, well, Ian, let's put a bow on this week here in current sports with our Friday segment entitled Reflection Friday. Here we go. All right, favorite moments of the week here. There's so many to choose from. First off, we had a great lineup, I must say, Ian, here on WKAR's Current Sports. Specifically, you know, yesterday's Current Sports was so loaded. You know, we had Ira Childress, Okemos High School athletic director. He kind of talked about, you know, budgets from the high school level, right? Because we had the conversation about Eastern Michigan University cutting four sports. And a big shout out to John Simon, who is behind the glass right now, because he helped conduct and schedule an interview with us to lead that hour with a professor by the name of Ronald Fisher in the Department of Economics. Ronald kind of gave and really did a great job of breaking down the economics of college athletics. Those were as well as today, right? I mean, you know, also with Scott Pohl and the Keith Gave interview, and then we had Carlton Valentine on. Just, my favorite moment of the week has to be the guest that we've had on throughout this week here on Current Sports. Compelling stuff, right?
Yeah, we've had some great guests. I think my favorite moment of the week, I don't know if you saw the Mike Valenti rant the Syracuse game.
Right.
I purposely didn't watch it at first because I was like, all right, I probably know what he's going to say. But then Scott Pohl actually came in and said, no, you need to go watch that like right now. And I watched it and I was blown away.
Yeah, Valenti is he's interesting.
He is. He's definitely a homer, but he's also the first to rip on MSU, and he does not hold back.
He does it all the time. Yeah, he does. If he doesn't like something, that's Mike for you. That's a shtick. So, But it should be a fun weekend. A lot of NCAA tourney games to get to. The Sweet 16 continues tonight, and the Elite Eight will begin tomorrow. So enjoy it. Hopefully your bracket doesn't get even more destroyed than it is now. Be easy, people.